All right, amigos family, we're back with another episode of the podcast. We are so glad you joined us. We're here with your dose of information and inspiration for all the great stuff that you're fueling down in Nicaragua. And we got a good one today. It's been a long summer. Summer's coming to an end. And it's been a hot one. Been hot in Ohio. It's been hot in Chinandega. It's been hot in Georgia. It's been hot everywhere. And but that didn't stop our progress as an organization. We started a couple of new water systems. We inaugurated a couple of water systems. Water for Chinandega has been like a huge push this summer, so everybody's behind it and kind of this idea that we're really going to help bring clean water to every home in the state of Chinandega that wants it within the next 10 years or so. And so this summer has been like a huge push to kind of bring awareness to that, because I don't think a lot of people understand or realize. It was shocking to me to know that over 100,000 people still live in the department of Chinandega that don't have access to clean running water. And so, this summer has been rallied around that, that goal. And so all these folks, lots of churches and groups and schools and businesses and families and individuals have been coming, flying down to Nicaragua over the last 2 or 3 months and helping us. And we've had hundreds of volunteers and dozens of churches and partners who've come down and jumped in with us on that goal. Like I said, we started a couple of water systems this summer with the help of visiting groups, and then we inaugurated a couple of them as well. And from all those visiting partners and groups and churches, we were able to talk with two people. And the first one, I think many of y'all may know, Jared Alexander, who lived with his family, his wife and two children in Chinandega. Their whole family moved to Nicaragua, and then now they've moved back, and now he's leading groups again. And then the other person that we got to talk to from this summer is Dan Huss. And Dan is the youth leader from the trip that Danny Dugan took over a decade ago on his first trip to Nicaragua. And everybody knows Danny, and everybody knows the history there. I mean, Danny is a pivotal role plays a pivotal role in keeping our organization up and running, and it all started with this guy, Dan Huss. He's an incredible person, but we're really excited to kind of introduce him to the rest of the Amigos family. He's an inspiring dude. And so Danny and Dan went to Danny's house and set up a couple microphones in his kitchen and got into some really good stuff. So stay tuned. We love you, Amigos family. Thanks for joining us. This is a conversation you don't want to miss. Café con Dani. Or you could say Café con Dané. I don't know. This is a good one, y'all.
So, Amigos family is sitting here, Danny Dugan and Dan Huss. Dan, you want to say hi?
Hi, everybody.
So, we are sitting here at my kitchen table in Chinandega, Nicaragua, ready to just do some reminiscing and have some fun thinking back over the past 15 years and think about maybe the next 15 to come.
That's crazy to think about.
I know. So, Dan, give us a scoop. Will you tell us a story of how you guys got here and just a little bit about who you are, your background, so people can meet you?
Sure. I guess I'll start by just like telling you who I am. Dan Huss. I am a high school youth director at Incarnate Word Parish in Chesterfield, Missouri, basically St. Louis. And I've been there for 25 years, so a really, really, really long time. My background is in accounting. So no theology, no youth ministry, no nothing. So I'm not really qualified for this job. Hopefully after 25 years, it's getting kind of close. And so I live there. I am married to my wife, Ellie, and I have three kids. Lily, who is going to be a sophomore at Mizzou. Molly, who's going to be a senior in high school. And My son, Will, who is going to be a seventh grader. So we have a busy life, crazy life all over the place. And but I love what I get to do. And it's pretty awesome since this is the first time in 4 years I've been back down here to hang out with you. So how did we get connected? So this dates back to before you. So
before my time.
It is before your time. I had, as a high school youth minister, always wanted to do some sort of mission trip. And, you know, 15 years ago or so, it seemed like if anybody went anywhere, they went to Mexico. They drove to Texas, and then each morning would drive across the border and then hop back across in the afternoon, painted a school or did things like that. And I guess I'd always just felt like I wanted to do more. And I had a former teen at the time. She was a student at St. Louis University who came to me after making a trip here in the early, early days of Amigos. And she came back to me literally with an old three-ring binder full of pictures because you had to print them off back then. She didn't have a phone.
Making reels or
no reels,
on TikTok.
no anything, no Facebook, nothing. And she brought this binder probably with 150, 200 pictures. And her time here, she had spent at Via Catalina. And she literally with tears in her eyes was like, you've got to take teens here. You know, of course, at the time, I'm like, oh, wow, this is cool. But like, really, in reality, when she said, I went to Nicaragua, you're like, no way that's happening. but I promised her that I would at least look into it. So I did the little bit of research. I couldn't even tell you what I found online for Amigos or anything like that.
I wish we could go back in time and see what you did.
I would love. I don't even know. That's the crazy thing. I probably have like some actual like hard copy file folder somewhere. But to go back and look at it and just see, because then I went to my pastor, who, of course, you know, is going to say, absolutely not. There is no way. My pastor at the time was like, well, you seem excited about it and you seem to have a little bit of information. So I say, let's go for it. And that's when you kind of get that sinking feeling like, oh, crap, this is for real. I'm really going to go to Nicaragua, you know? And so I pitched it to people, which I knew at that point, all the people would go, no way. And they had a million questions.
And you had a million no answers.
Right. Everything from, is it safe? And I'm like, I think so. What's the food like? I don't know. What's sleeping arrangements like? I don't know. What are we actually going to do? Everything. I just literally had to say, I don't know. And so when I knew nobody would sign up and I sent out the registration, 45 people signed up. And so I don't know. I think we said 2008, 2009, yeah, somewhere around there. 45 of us hopped on a plane, not having an idea what this was going to be. Funny, I don't even know if I'm sure I've told you the story, but like we land in Managua and nobody speaks Spanish.
Perfect. Great start.
I don't even know if Amigos was doing t-shirts. So we had no idea who we were looking for. None of our luggage showed up. Not one piece of luggage showed up on that first trip. And here I am. I don't speak any Spanish. We had to stand there. There's a little counter next time you come in, right next to the carousel that's like something baggage, you know. And we stood there trying to give them the number of every piece of luggage and nothing showed up. And somehow, like literally the next day, a FedEx truck showed up to Casablanca with all of our luggage. I have no idea how that
happened. In time to go climb Cerro Negro.
Just in time. You know, that trip was amazing. Obviously, I'm sure there's a million stories just from that trip. But we came back and I think outside of COVID, we never looked back.
Yeah.
I was trying to look over, I think all those years, it's like over 500 different people have come down here, from Incarnate Word kind of a life-changing thing. That's
how many, have come over the years?
I think somewhere around 500.
Wow.
Yeah, over the 15 years or 14 years.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So for everybody listening, just it's so fun for Dan and I to be sitting here. It's like our friendship has grown just so much in awesome ways over all these years. We probably met at this point 15-ish years ago. Like, yeah, 15 years ago.
When did you graduate?
2010. So yeah, I started coming around probably 2008-ish.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly.
You know, let's call it 15 years. You know, kind of started as, you know, youth leader, a teen at Incarnate Word, and then it's obviously just grown into becoming great buds over the years. I would love to hear from your perspective, what do you remember about yours and I's first trip together? So I am sitting here in Nicaragua, live here in Nicaragua, work for Amigos, because Dan brought me here in 2010 on my first trip. Are there any moments, I know there are a couple of funny ones that we can remember, which you can share. Any moments that you remember of watching, you know, me and the rest of the crew at the time and just what was going through your head? Anything come to mind when I ask that?
Oh, let me think. I don't know if specific. Were the t-shirt, the tie-dye t-shirt, was that the first year? Or was that your second year?
That was the second year, yeah. Okay.
So here's what I think you were like in our second or third trip. So it was still early days, still Casablanca. You know, still like we did like sketchy things for like 3 days on Wednesday or whatever. Went to a random, did you go to the water park?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So what I would say is like by the second or third year come down here, I was just so excited for somebody else to experience. That's it. I mean, I was just like, I had talked about it forever, but every opportunity to get somebody new to come down and catch the vision or not even catch that, just like let it move their heart, I think was the most awesome thing. But because I knew when that came down, a group of people, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be Nicaragua, is when you put a group of people together that experience something like this together, life change happens. And the last thing I wanted was a bunch of people to come down, get a bunch of pictures to go back and post somewhere. That you didn't want that. You knew this could be something that could not only impact the people's lives that we come here to spend time with, but really more anything impact ours. And I knew from experience of the 1 or 2 years already that the teens I brought down almost without a doubt became leaders in our program. Mm. Not that they weren't leaders before, but it was a different kind of leader. And I think for me, that's what I've always wanted for teens is I want them to be leaders, not just in their faith, but leaders in the community that then ended up pointing each other to their faith. And so, but yeah, I think lots of stories. I mean, what do you remember? I mean, you came down that first time. Obviously, you live here now. But I mean, what's it like for Danny to walk down the very first time?
So, you know, it's funny. When I asked that question, I was thinking back. Okay, so what do I remember? I remember, you know, you can like close your eyes. And I'm literally sitting here closing my eyes. And you can just like see flashes of moments. I remember getting off the bus. I don't remember airplane ride. I don't remember landing. I remember getting off the bus in front of Casablanca. I remember being greeted. Dan and I always laugh about this. I was really, really lucky. The cats that were living in Casablanca decided to pee in my suitcase.
and you didn't tell anybody until like three days later.
So, you know, here I am on my first mission trip being like, all right, guess this is a part of it. So, you know, all joking aside, I remember that. I remember sitting in the circle around in Devo. I remember I remember a Devo that we heard about our treasure chests. You remember that? You know, it was like something about like find your treasure. It was a biblical reference. I don't remember what the exact reference was, but like, what's your treasure going to be? Like, what are you going after? You know, AKA, like, what are you hoping to become? I remember that. I remember when we started working in Chunco, we started the water system. We all were standing on the highway. Cars were buzzing by. And I remember we sang, we did a worship song all together. Adam was here that year, and Adam's the worship leader in Incarnate. And he picked a song that was like, it could be bilingual. It was either something that was Alleluia.
There was something with an Alleluia.
There's something
with
an Alleluia with an Amen. And I remember we just prayed it over and over, and it's like the voices got louder and louder. And I remember kind of stepping back and being like, this is it. You know, this is church. This is community. This is people coming together. You know, the idea of juntos that we talk about a lot now wasn't a huge word, but if I could go back in time and put a word on that moment, it's like, this was juntos. Okay. I remember that. I remember struggling so hard up Cerro Negro. I remember that some of my friends had my water bottle and PBJ in their backpack.
In the room at the top.
So never going to make that mistake again. And then I remember this feeling of right before I left, kind of looking around and being like, my time here is not done. Mm-hmm. That was 13 years ago.
Yep.
You know, it's like sitting here now, it's like, you know, that is a whole, my time here is not done. Aren't even the words that I would choose now. But I remember thinking that and kind of having a little, probably young, maybe innocent, maybe a little immature prayer and say like, God, just keep leading me back here, you know, until otherwise. Like year in and year out, here I've been.
So somebody invited you, obviously, and maybe you want to share that too. How did you actually get there? But like, how, when you came back, did you like immediately like tell everybody you knew, or was it like, I need to process this?
Gosh. Yeah. So did a couple things right when I got back. So I'll talk about getting back and then fast forward or rewind to the invitation. So I remember getting back. I remember being greeted at the airport. A bunch of people, you know, came to say, hey, and kind of celebrate the fact that we're back from Nicaragua. I remember Nick Herman, you know, best friend, brother, picking me up at the airport, and we went out. I think we went to like a Steak and Shake, classic St. Louis, you know, decision, go to Steak and Shake, post Nicaragua. And I remember telling him about going to El Chunco. And I remember he kept being Chunco, what a weird name, you know, right. Like, and so I remember talking about that. The next day I called Rockhurst, which was the university that I went to. And I remember asking them if they could move my electives around so that I could take a Spanish class. I'd taken French all through high school. So I remember calling, I remember getting on the phone with my advisor, saying, hey, I need to get in a Spanish class. Those were like the two initial things that I remember once I got back. And you probably had a sign-up sheet the next week of who wants to go back.
Right.
And I was like, coming back for more.
Yeah.
So I got invited. I remember I was standing in the Incarnate Word parking lot. And this was in 2009, the year before I came. And my buddy, you know, lifelong friend now, buddy from high school, Aaron Bish, came back and had bought me a bracelet here. And it was like a super colorful, you know, rainbow, every color under the sun type bracelet. And he gave it to me. And I remember him giving it to me. He's like, Dukes, I want you to take this. Everyone called me Dukes in high school. He's like, Dukes, I want you to take this. I'm giving this to you, but I want you to come back to Nicaragua with me next year. I was like, great. And so just cool. Thinking back like that, great, let's do it. Little did I know, right? All these years later.
Yeah, I mean, you do. You think about it and you're just like, you know, I think of how scared we could be to invite anybody to anything.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we're like invite them to a baseball game or a concert and think no big deal. But like if it's something like that we're passionate about, but we're just not sure if they'll think it, it's like for so many of us, the fear of rejection. Like, what if they say no? What if they like laugh in my face? Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, you're talking about a pretty extreme thing. It's, you know, it's going to cost money. It's going to cost some time. You know, somebody might think we're crazy that we come here, you know, but it's a risk that could end up being, you know, the reward on the other end is, you know, which obviously, I mean, look at it. I mean, you think about it now, that one little simple invitation and bracelet has turned into what you do now.
Yeah.
I mean,
career, life.
Right.
All of it.
And there's no way when you first came here or, you know, like I remember your second year and we were like, oh, let's make tie-dye t-shirts. Yeah. And we went to Mike Zuniga's house and like, all, you know, 30 people show up. And
stained his driveway.
And- yeah. And making t-shirts. I remember for me, Will, my son, was like an infant. I mean, yeah. I don't even know if he was like a year or two. And, you know, him being there, I think there's a picture, maybe you yeah. holding him or something like that. Yeah. Like crazy to think here's a bunch of high school students who are like, have no idea what life is going to throw their way. And then you come here, you know, and for anybody who listens to us, that's actually been here, which I would assume is a lot of people, you know what this does to you.
Yeah.
It is impossible. It's like, even we were saying in Devo the other night, you know, I looked around at our group right now and I just said, it is impossible for you to leave this place and not talk about it.
Yep.
There's no way. You know, everybody comes home, you come home from school and mom and dad go, hey, how was school? And you're like, fine. How was work? Fine. How you doing? I'm good. You know, like those are simple answers. There's no way you could come back from here and go. And when somebody goes, how was it? There's no possible way.
No one word answer.
It was good. Yep. Like you're going to be like, the volcano kicked my butt.
Yeah.
In fact, some of my butt might still be laying out there.
Definitely some of my PBJ is still there.
Exactly. You know, but like, you will talk about it. And without a doubt, you probably will talk about the rest of your life. And so I said, even if like every person here talks to five people, which we know they're not.
Yeah.
They're going to talk to like 50 or 100. Yeah. You're going to post your pictures and lots of people are going to know. And people are going to ask, was it really safe? Was it really good? Was whatever, you know? And I know without a doubt, every single person sitting back there right now is going to go, it was so much different and better than I could have ever imagined. And like, you've got to come with me. Yeah. And I think that invitation, just like in no way would Aaron Bishop thought, oh man, I'm going to invite Danny and Danny's going to go down there and live and work down there and get married. Yeah. You know, I mean, seriously, like it just kind of mind blowing.
Yeah.
You know, which I'm sure for you, you just, even after working here, the stories you have of Nicaraguans or staff members or things you've seen over the years, and you're just like, how did I get lucky enough to just be, why would God let me be a part of this?
Yeah. Well, you said something today. So to paint a little picture for everyone listening, we right now are hosting Incarnate Word 45 people, most newcomers, folks that haven't been here before. And so, you know, Incarnate, like many people listening who have been coming for years, we're able to start the La Truscada School, what we lovingly call the Academy now. Start with the drainage system, start with the perimeter wall, see it when it was just a peanut field. Mm-hmm. You know, coming back today, we got to go to the school this morning and Dan said something, and I don't want to butcher your words. I'm going to ask if you can say it again, about the impact of us stepping into people's stories. Will you just share a little bit about what you shared of has looked like from your point of view?
It's something that I've always, and me and my dad and I talk about this a lot too. My dad's been every single trip we've ever gone. He's 77 now. So we talk about this all the time. We're like, what we're a part of is like literally rewriting history. Yeah. Like someday the kids are going to have a history book that talks about Chinandega and their community, and maybe even specifically Truscada, that talks about the day the water was turned on. And those kids that were standing there with us today, fifth and sixth graders, that when we were there that day and that water was turned on, they were 1 and 2 years old. They were there being held by somebody, screaming because somebody forced their head under the water, you know, standing there in their underwear and screaming. And there you all saw them out there today in a uniform. And, you know, it kind of like Nick said, working on a computer and bilingual. And none of that would have happened without a vision to say, let's see if we can rewrite history here. And then it happened. You know, and the other thing I said is, you know, remembering, you know, when Truscada, the school, was nothing more than an empty field that we put a wall around. You know, what I saw today, and if you haven't been to the school in a while, I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's beyond, I remember John and Sabrina or whoever else was involved in the school at the time, the dreams they had for the school. Mm-hmm. And all I could say is what I saw today was nowhere near the dream they had. Yeah. It blew it out of the water. Their dream was a small speck compared to what I saw today. And literally how beautiful it is, you know. And sometimes you could drive through Nicaragua and not see all that many beautiful things, but like, literally beautiful, in a place that these kids could come to school and be proud of and grow and learn and be, you know, history makers, literally change history for the family and, you know, themselves.
So speaking of changing history, rewriting history, I'd love to hear kind of two sides of this. First side is other folks that have come over the years. They can be teens, they can be families, they can be adults, where you've seen their lives. It's like, you know, I think about the date that we flew back to the States after my first trip. It was July 24th. It's like July 24th was just like, that was the day where things just changed. Life looked different once I was back from my first trip. So everyone's had that day that they got back. Can you think of anybody, you know, using their names, not using their names, folks that have, you know, come over the years that are just out there doing something awesome or just being themselves in a new way because of how their history was tongue twister, rewritten from their time here?
I mean, there's so many stories, you know, obviously throughout the years, the number of high school students who ended up coming down here for the 6 weeks or 3 months, or the number of people that came down here for a year or two or whatever, just like you, you know, and maybe stayed for a pretty extended time, you know, maybe not as long as they had intended, but either way, we're like, I want to do something different.
Yeah.
The kind of different that probably when they went home and told mom and dad on one side were like, awesome. Really?
Yeah.
Is that what you really want to do though? You know, and it's those kind of like moments when like God tugs at your heart.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's like what I remember when somebody came to me and said, hey, would you leave your job as an accountant and be a youth minister? And the one side of it, it's like your heart jumps immediately, like, yes. But your brain goes, that's the dumbest idea I have ever heard. Like, you could be a volunteer and do youth ministry. Or, hey, you could go down to Nicaragua once or twice a year and do the work, but you don't need to go live there. I mean, what are you going to do for money? How are you going to, like, save up? How are you going to do these things? And it's like, your heart says, go for it.
Yeah.
So I think of the number of teens that have done that, and it changed, you know, transformed their life into like, as they got older, they, you know, who knows what they did, you know, and they might've gone off and just got married, but some like have entered the seminary to think about maybe becoming a priest or religious life, or have become youth ministers or music ministers. And, you know, but I think of like, you know, I think of somebody like you that goes to Rockhurst and brings people down. Yeah. I think of people that went to DeSmet and the high school in St. Louis and brought them down. In other high schools. And then, you know, Father Patrick, who now he's Father Patrick, but you know, when he came down, say, I'm pretty sure same time as you, he's just another teenager trying to figure out what am I going to do with my life? And then all of a sudden God just kind of smacks him over the face.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I know I'm called to give my life, you know, and he enters the seminary, becomes a priest, an absolutely incredible priest. But now he's the vice president of one of the largest co-ed Catholic high schools in St. Louis or in the St. Louis area. And what, a month ago?
Yeah, a month ago.
A month ago, as vice president of a high school now, he's bringing teenagers down. And you just go, the only way that happens is with God. And I think about that for me. I'm like, who was I? You know, and I don't say to like pat myself on the back. It was like anybody who wanted to come could come with us. So it wasn't like I handpicked people. You're just like, hey, you want to go?
Sign up, pay on time.
Yeah.
And you're good to go.
Get on the airplane.
Yeah.
And find your own way around, because I'm not walking you around with a bright yellow t-shirt to make sure you know where I am. You know, and you just go. It only happens if one, you're open to say, all right, God, I don't know where the heck you're taking me.
Mm-hmm.
But if I take this step, you better be there, because I am going to fall flat on my face because I don't know what the heck I'm doing, you know. And you know, and then you just tack on all the years. But I mean, you know, we know families that have come down, a mom and a dad and whatever, and it's rewritten kind of what they did with their profession.
Yeah,
we've seen adults come down that when they went back, they quit their jobs. You know, with families of 3, 4, 5 kids, like, you want to talk about risky.
Yeah.
That's a risk in of itself, all because they came here, not just because it was like, oh, Nicaragua, it's got to be that. But it was just like, I'm called to something different.
Mm-hmm.
I'm called to more. And, you know, and I think that those are the kind of things that you just go, there's no way I would have put that in. I could have put that in somebody's head.
Right.
It was them just being open and listening. So.
The other side of the question was going to be, some of my very favorite people in the world are your three kids and watching them be little kids and now the awesome young people that they are. I would love to hear from your point of view. Lily and Molly came probably right around the same age, what, 7, 8 years old?
Yeah, 7 or 8 years old.
Will started coming.
When he was four.
So what has that looked like for you and Ellie, you know, having the kids come down here? And What do you see in them? You know, I hear from Molly, this is one of my favorite places in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lily went out and did some nursing work yesterday, since she's, you know, going to nursing school, and hearing her talk about the other side of the work. You know, I just would love to hear what comes to mind when you think about their journeys here over all these years.
You know, I think the first time when my wife and I brought them, people thought we were crazy. Like, they're too little, you know, they're going to get kidnapped or something. I mean, that's like, you know, and, but we were just like, what a cool opportunity. You know, as a parent right now, I think of, without doing it on purpose, you try to block them from any sort of uncomfortableness or awkwardness or difficult things, because we think that that's going to help them. In some ways it does, right? We don't want them to face some of the difficult things we do, but sometimes we block them from difficult things so much that when they are faced with it, because we will be faced with it, they don't know what to do. And so I think we thought, you know what, let's take them down there. And most of us would probably not disagree with this, especially if you're a parent of kids. Like, kids are so resilient.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't phased. They weren't like, oh, it's too hot, or, oh, I got to eat PB&J again, or the water's cold, or, you know, I mean, none of those things. They literally just went out, you know, and it's something I remember with Will when he was literally four. He wasn't going to be five for like a couple months after we left here. And we literally just gave him a drawstring bag full of like Hot Wheels and a ball and something else. And it was unbelievable, because I think the universal language for kids is play.
Yeah.
Let's just play.
Hot Wheels.
And they literally, he would so dirty every single day. But I mean, we would literally have to hold him down and scrub it. But I mean, to see that, and you know, here he is 12 right now. And he just yesterday running up and down using a machete. I would have rather than maybe not do that. But you know what? Hey,
but he put it to good use.
He did. I mean, we needed it, right? There's just so many freaking roots. You know, to see him just grow. And not only that, but I love that the people he's looking up to are people who are willing to serve.
Yeah.
People that he now kind of like idolizes is people who are giving their life, that is going to be normal for him. And the same thing for the girls.
I love that. Yeah.
That is not this like, oh, that one time we went to the soup kitchen, or that one time we went on a mission trip, and like, no, this is like normal.
Yeah.
This is what we do.
It's like a way of life.
Yeah. Yeah. And now to see on the other end with my girls, who one in college and one will be a year from now, And know that those kind of stirrings are in their hearts, whatever it is, you know, maybe it'll be the career they choose, you know, with like nursing and caring for people, you know, who knows, someday they find their way here. But just that, again, that their life is about serving and loving. But to see the witness that they are now, to see, like, I used to bring teenagers down and my little kids would see those teenagers, but now to know my kids are the teenagers or older, you know. And to know that, like, when they, Lily last year, when she's filling out her, you know, all these applications for schools, Nicaragua was on every single one of them. In fact, I'm pretty sure her essay was about Nicaragua, you know? And so it's been kind of a killer the last couple of years because of COVID and not being able to come. So time length wise, the last time we were here was 2019, and Lily was getting ready to be a sophomore in high school. And Molly was getting ready to start eighth grade. And now she's getting ready to be a senior and getting ready to be a sophomore in college. And you just go, it's just crazy. So
for you personally, what keeps you coming back every year? Obviously with COVID, there were a couple skip years, but I know seeing people have that experience. What else is it?
You know, somebody asked me, like, I think the question the other night was like, what was your purpose today? Maybe, I don't even know, maybe something like that. And in a weird way, like, and this isn't, but like, because I've been here so many times, like, could somebody else do this? You bet. I could pass it on to somebody, but without doing a lot of work, I already know how to organize some flights. I already know who to talk to. I know what to think about, what questions to answer and set up. So without doing a lot of work, I can offer this to people. Oh. And so part of that is I can do this without a lot. You know, I'm sure it takes a week and some time and stuff like that. But I guess the reason I come back is I feel like our time here affects every single person differently. Mm-hmm. but it impacts every single one of them. And so sometimes it's almost kind of like, bring them there. It'd be like what, somebody who's never seen Disney World ever, but you've been there and you know everything about it. And you're just like, just wait. And then you like open the doors or you walk them up in a blindfold and you just go, here you go. Mm-hmm. And you know, not only will they be wowed by what they're going to see, but you know, they're going to be loved by people who don't know them.
Yeah.
Who are willing to serve them. They think they're coming here to serve, but they realize by the end of it, they're like, I just been served. I've just been loved. And I know when that happens, like hearts are moved. And that's why I think we were talking about that the other night. It's just like, I just wonder what are the things going on in right there, right now, what's going on in their hearts.
Yeah.
That we may not hear, they may not verbalize right now, but what's going on in their hearts and their minds. And what are they texting back to their parents at night right now? Or their friends? What are they saying?
Or sitting there, you know, that I always think about that like last thought you have right before you fall asleep, and we'll never remember it because you're about to fall asleep.
Right.
But it's like you've got that last thought. It's like, what's that last thought on people's minds right before they fall asleep?
Yeah.
What are they thinking about? What are they, you know, praying that last prayer of gratitude for the day, or wondering what's gonna happen? That's what always keeps me curious. Like, what are you thinking?
Yeah. And I also think for some, it's that there's a little burst of excitement,
mm-hmm.
but then there's also a little bit of that fear of like, man, what? Because I'm sure they look at like you or Nick or somebody like that. And even though I can tell them, like, I remember Danny when he was 17 years old.
He was just like you. He didn't know anything. That
right. And they're like, yeah, whatever. I heard his Spanish. He's so freaking good with his Spanish. There's no way I'm him. Or today at the school, and Nick is like just spewing all this info about the school and the changes and the computer labs and the teachers and all these things. And I know these kids are going, there's no way he was just a teen at some parish in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And then when they go, oh, wait. It gets, when it gets real is when it kind of can get a little scary. And, you know, and some people, when they get that scared, they're like, push that feeling down, push it down, push it down. But I also know that those kind of things don't just stay down there. Eventually they kind of,
the harder you push them down, the faster they come back up.
Yeah. they do. Yeah. And, you know, you'll get back home and something else will happen. You even try to choose something else. And then it'll come back, or you just won't be happy. And you'll just be like, man, I should have listened to that, or I need to listen to that. And so, you know, for you and I sitting here right now, we look back and go, this is what happens 10 years later.
Yeah.
Or it's like going to the school today and going, I don't even know what year started. It's 2007 or 2000. No, I don't know. When was the school?
So we started building
2012.
Water system. So we turned the water, we inaugurated the system in 2013. So we probably started building 2015.
Right.
But started building 2015.
But you had no, I mean, you had a vision of what you hoped it could be, but you had no idea, you know, and now 8 years later, you see the fruits of it and you're like, whoa. And so for me, I think about that with teenagers. I'm like, in 5, 7, 10 years from now, I'll actually see the real fruits of what this week does.
Remember in Devo this morning, we heard that phrase, beginning hope. So hope before the thing started. And then Nick, who was giving Devo, referred to it as middle hope.
Yeah.
He's like, we're in the middle right now. Like this isn't even the final product. And when he said middle hope, I thought, wow, middle hope is as good. And just the hope of kind of just what's happening, the goodness. Right. We're just in the thick of it. It's like, what's going to be on the other side? And that's, you know, what you said before about the vision, it's like, it goes beyond our wildest dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. I sit here now and I'm almost 50 years old and I go, I even look at my own life and I'm just like, how the heck did I ever get here?
Yeah.
You know, I would have never told you I'd be doing youth ministry as long as I have. I would have told you you're crazy.
Yeah.
and then tell me that I'm coming down to Nicaragua for the 13th or 14th time. Like I'd just be like, no
way.
That would never happen, you know? And then to see the things that we've all seen here with the people we've seen here and just, Yeah. That's when you go, you wonder if there really is a God. Here's like proof positive. You're like, exactly. Well, I can't explain it any other way.
So thinking about this idea of past 15 years, you know, all the good stuff you've seen, what are your hopes for this place, for Chinandega, for Nicaragua over the next 15 years to come? Comes to mind that question.
I don't know that I've ever really thought about that. That's a good one. You know, I think even in the small ways right now, each time you come down, is there, you still see some familiar faces.
Yeah.
You know, but you do wonder, like, was I just playing soccer with some kid at Chuscada that will someday, you know, 15 years down the road, be like your right-hand man?
Yeah.
You're going to go, you're not going to believe it. This guy, pull out those pictures from 2023 and go, you see that kid right there? This is him as a grown adult. And he's doing this other arm of Amigos that they haven't even thought of today. You know, I mean, that would be awesome. You know, but I think that, you know, what you sit here and write it now and you're like, water for Chinandega 10 years from now, nobody, you know, like, how cool would that be if that really became reality? You know?
Well, and it's like, think about the movement that would spark. Because, you know, the program, obviously, that we're working on right now is Water for Chinandega, but there's kind of the, I don't know if it's obvious or non-obvious, part B to that, Water for Nicaragua. It's like, if we can do this over the next 10 years, if we can seriously get, you know, water into the homes of every family that wants it, it's like, it's the whole rest of the country that it's like waiting for the exact same thing. Hearing about it probably now already, if like, there's this thing going on in Chinandega and, you know, a bunch of folks from St. Louis show up once a year with shovels and pickaxes, or a bunch of, you know, friends from Chinandega as well will jump into their day mission trip and go and dig. I'm sure people are either going to start to hear about it or starting to hear about it too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of endless what could happen, but, you know, there's so many things that have happened in this first 15 years for us being a part of it that don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm excited for a whole lot more things that just don't make sense.
I love it. So you said something earlier about the way you look at youth group and, you know, working with teenagers and kind of their forward, you know, trajectory, where they're going. It's all about leadership. So obviously, you know, we've talked a bunch about, we're trying to invest a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of resources in the young people of Nicaragua. What's the special ingredient? What's the key to success to get kids on that track to just become awesome leaders, to believe in their own skills and to just be good people and be good to their schools, their churches, their communities, their families? What have you learned over all these years in youth ministry?
You know, one of the things I think first off is just, a lot of people want to think teenagers are selfish and self-centered and all they do is care about themselves. And in some respects, that's 100% true. it doesn't really change much when we're adults. But
yeah, we just start to have grays in our beards and
right, exactly. And still
wrinkles in
right,
places. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. You know, I just think like the more we can begin to help kids become aware, even if I could get them to be aware of just the 10-foot circle around them versus the 1-foot circle around them. And when you become aware, and that's a hard thing because aware takes time. Aware means sacrificing who I am or my comforts and stuff like that. But as soon as teens become aware, they begin to see something different. And then through time and affirmation and guidance, like you, because you can see leadership in somebody. I mean, I know a ton of teens that are great, great, great leaders. They just lead kids to do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but if you could take that energy, you know, and turn it into something absolutely amazing, you know, and I would think it doesn't matter whether you're a kid from the US or Nicaragua or anywhere. It's the same thing. It's like, as soon as they begin to go, how can I take a little of what I have and give it to somebody else, and invite and encourage and influence, you know, not for my own agenda, but for the agenda that would better other people. That's when you get great leaders, you know? And I think Amigos does that so well is because at the end of the day, what do the leaders here honestly really do? They serve.
Yeah.
They serve, you know? And a good leader serves. A good leader doesn't care if their name's written in the book or on the front of the cover or anything like that. They care about their people and making sure in some ways you're elevating your people and pushing yourself further down. And, you know, I think that I look for that in our own youth group. I'm like, if I can help inspire great leaders, then whatever they go do someday, whether they're a teacher or a doctor or a mom or a dad or whatever they do, if they're a great leader, then other people are going to follow them. And then, I mean, if you just tack on faith, then other people will even follow that too. So, you know, awareness and then going and then affirm them for who they are and keep loving them and guiding them along the way.
That's awesome.
I mean, what do you see? I mean, you work with kids here, you know, you see kids in probably a different light than I do, but, you know, what would you say?
Oh, yeah, it's like almost like retweet, right? Like everything that you said. But I think what I think about most with kids is this idea of you have a place. It's like at first, it's like there's a place for you,
yeah.
Not just a place for y'all, like, you know, all the young people. It's like there's a place for you here. And I think the second thing I think about, you know, time and incarnate when I was, you know, in high school, there's a place for you specifically, but there's also a purpose for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just like you belong here.
Yeah.
It's like you belong, you're welcome, but like I'm waiting for you to do something. You know, it's that twofold of like show up and be you, but let's do something while we're at it. You know, the program that we have with our young people, we call Leaders in Action. We run back and forth. We can all laugh about it. We probably threw 50 names out there. Like, okay, yeah, like, you know, what should we call this? It's like we want leaders and we want them to be moving. We want them to do stuff. But I think something new that I'm learning that I, you know, probably a little bit of maturity, also a little bit of just like a higher sense of empathy is sometimes the purpose isn't a thing. It's not a tangible go and do it. It's almost like the sense of who am I becoming. So, you know, when kids can just like sit around a circle and talk about stuff, it doesn't even matter what they're talking about. Just have a space to just get it all out there. It keeps that energy moving in a forward motion opposed to being stuck on the internet or being, you know, stuck sitting alone at night worried about something. It's like, just get that out there. So I think something I'm trying to do with our young people is just create spaces just to talk about stuff.
Yeah.
In a really, really simple way. You know, we were talking the other day about like, so how did we create great spaces for kids? Like just create the space.
Yeah.
Put parameters around it. Like this is what the space is for. This is how often we're going to have it. Then just get kids together.
Yeah.
So I think that. And then another thing too, this is what I'm thankful for. I think it's a little bit of like how I grew up in St. Louis, a little bit of maybe the USC feel, but this idea of you can go and be what you want. I think it's like that permission of like, go and be what you want to be, but recognize those feelings when you feel like you're at your best.
Yeah.
And then continue to put yourself in that spot where you feel like you're at your best. And ultimately, that's how you're going to lead. You're going to lead through service, as you said. You're also going to lead through your example, which is being yourself. It's like, we don't need two Dannys. We don't need two Dans. Funny enough, same name, right?
Yeah,
but like, right. We don't need two Dans. It's like, we need a Dan, we need a Danny, and we need everybody else just to be themselves. So I think that's what I'm, that's yeah. what I'm pushing kids.
Authentic, I think, is a word that comes to mind. And, you know, when you create space, authentic and genuine, you know, kids thrive with authentic and genuine and vulnerable conversations. You
totally.
Know, like I even look at just like small groups in the Rancho at night, you know, and I mean, I didn't make the groups, you guys made the groups, but just knowing it puts people in a position where they really share, you know, and all of a sudden you look around, you're like somebody's sharing and there's tears in their eyes. And you know that person is giving you their heart. And when most people, the one thing I love is like when someone is vulnerable, people don't run away. We have this fear that like if you're real and vulnerable, everybody's gonna be like, oh my gosh, stop. I don't wanna hear it. But that never happens.
You lean in.
Yeah.
You literally move closer.
Everybody leans in. And so, you know, when you create space for that, like, and when people are able to be vulnerable with one another, they'll tackle the world for you.
Really, it was cool last night in Devo. It just happened to be me. It happened to be me. Anybody could have shared it, but we kind of as a way to push people to open up. You know, it was our fourth night Devo. I just said, "Hey guys, does anybody feel like these days are flying?" kind of, you know, everyone throws up their hands. Anybody feels like we've lived a lot of life, people mm-hmm. throw up their hands. It's like us sharing this, us saying things out loud, is going to make us remember. It's going to allow us to immortalize these moments. It was cool. I don't know if your dad told you, but one of the teens went up to your dad this morning and goes, Bob, or Mr. Bob, I don't know what they call him, Bob, you've been on 13 trips. How do you remember everything? This is my first time. I don't want to forget anything. And you know, your dad's like, well, I don't know. Write it down or talk. You know, he kind of gave his answer. But when he shared that with me, I just paused and I was like, hearing those words and they kind of echoed, I don't want to forget anything.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I think about our day-to-day life. It's like, how much, what did I do last Tuesday? I'd have to go back and look at my calendar.
I know.
What did I have going on? And so this idea of like, I don't want to forget anything. It's like, that is awesome. I want to hold on to it. That's the vulnerability. It's like, I feel like I'm so much of myself that I don't want to let go of this time and space.
Yeah. Well, and think of what this does here. This is so out of the norm of what most people do. And it's crazy because most people, could they say, yeah, they're hot. Would they rather sleep in their own bed and have air conditioning and whatever, eat their food? Although I think the food is beyond fantastic here. You could say all those things, but the way that they feel, they're like, I don't ever feel this way. I think one of the teens stood up into the whole group the other day. It was like, we had done the volcano in the first day at San Benito. And he was like, I have done more in 48 hours, I have lived more adventure and more life in the last 48 hours than in my first 19 years. Now, I hope that probably isn't true. Yeah. I hope he's had a pretty awesome 19 years, but he was saying something. That like what I've done in the last 2 years has been so exhilarating and humbling and life-giving and all those things all at once. It was almost more than he could contain, you know, and to think about that maybe our hearts right now, there's almost two sides to this, the side of like, there's almost kind of something sad about the way that we do live our life, that it becomes so mundane and we get caught up in the trap of you're supposed to go to school and then you're supposed to go to college. And then after that, you're supposed to get a good job so you can pay your bills and have a nice house and take nice vacations and, you know, drive a nice car and kind of live the American dream. But we know a lot of people that live that way and they're not bad people, but they'd be the first ones to tell you that they just don't feel like they're really living. And I think the words that came out of that teen's mouth was just saying, I feel like I'm really living while I'm here. And, you know, that's a pretty cool thing.
It's cool. I mean, hearing that too, it's like that idea. And, you know, it's a phrase we've used at Amigos for years and years, but this, you know, idea of coming alive, it's like, I'm alive. You know, you're feeling what life at its best can feel like.
Right.
I mean, sore and sunburned.
Oh, no.
And, you know, blisters on your hands. Yeah. But it's like you're living. You're living.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Oh, that's awesome. So a couple last questions, and these are just kind of fun. So of all these years, you know, I think 500 people or so that have come. Is there anybody that's come over the years that hasn't been in a while that you would love to get back to Nicaragua with?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, he's here right now. I mean, that's the thing is like when Mike Zuniga comes down here, like
Candyman,
Candyman, and like his is hysterical. And to see him down here without his daughters, you know, because they're grown or have kids or whatever, and still to come down and just now when we left, there he was sitting there talking to two teenage guys, just laughing, being silly. I mean, he adds comic relief to this. You know, I think of Maddie Ott, who also the same thing. She almost comes down as like a mom to every girl down here and braids their hair. But you know, I mean, you think back to like, I would love to like all the people that came the very first time, you know, or, I mean, I sit here and I go, you know, I think Lauren Page, who's the girl that told me about this. I mean, I know she came once with us. But maybe for all I know, she's been back, but I don't even know. But like for her to come back and see what this place is, like you kind of want to go, hey, I want you to see this because the courage you had to tell other people to come here has like transformed people.
Yeah.
You know, in some ways, I mean, you're a direct impact of that. Yeah.
I would love to thank her. It's like because she probably shaking in her boots, as I would say, you know, it's like showed up at your office. It's like, I've got this crazy idea.
Yeah.
Will you listen to me?
Yeah.
I mean, thank God you were on the other side. You're like, yeah, come on in. Tell me all about it. But it's like, I would love to say thank you for being bold. Thank you for being courageous, because I can't imagine my life without this place.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you think about it, you know, that in some ways you're a product of that. Nick's a product of that.
Yeah.
You know, all the people that have ever been here and, or, you know, all the people that give regularly or all the people that, I mean, just think of that. I just like, because one person, but like, so that would be cool for that. I think it just like to get the original 45 people that came with us when we didn't know.
Yeah.
And just say, we're almost kind of like, where are they now?
Yeah.
Because 15 years ago, those like 18-year-old kids, they're in their 30s.
Yeah.
Probably married and have their own kids. And, you know, that would be crazy.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
We got to look up those names. send this specific podcast to them.
And go, hey, we're going to have a reunion, like a 15-year or a 20-year reunion. We're going back to Nicaragua. Bring your spouse, bring your kids, bring whatever.
So kind of throw this back on you for a second. You get to look at me, see me living my dream, being so happy, overjoyed with my opportunity. How does it feel? And it can feel awkward to put you on the spot here, but how can it feel to be you knowing that you gave me this gift? It's like, you brought me here. You allowed me to do this. It's like, what do you do with that?
You know, it's something you kind of like lay in bed at night and just go. You have lots of hopes and dreams for the teens that come through your program, and you get to know them, you know their stories, and you know their families, and you know all these things. And at the end, you just want to see that. You just want to be like, could I just be a little bit of a launching board? Because I already know you're going to do more things than I will ever do. Could we just be a launching board? And you know, and sometimes that works and sometimes it just doesn't. And sometimes teens come and teens go and you may never see them again. But when I see you, you know, it's a funny thing. You and I were sitting in the Rancho, I guess it was Monday, and you guys played a video, which I know you guys have posted and stuff like that, of Paula.
Yeah.
And you leaned over to me and you said, you know, when I first came here, she was one of my first scholarship students that I really got to know. And so here she is now running her pharmacy. Just and so well with the name Paula's Pharmacy, and you're like, I'm kind of like a proud dad watching this, and in some ways that's what I do. I just sit there and you're like, I could never dream it, I could never plan it, I could never even imagine it to turn out this way, you know, and just to see you embrace that, embrace something that I love,
yeah,
you know, I think that's the other thing is like. When you see other people, not because yours is the best or the only way, because obviously there's a million ways, but like.
But you do kind of think that too.
This yeah, is right.
You're like, let's be honest.
But like, you know, and to see that, like, I just sit there and I'm just like, sometimes I'm like, I don't even know what he just said because I just stared at him.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I do that with my own kids. Sometimes I just sit there and I stare at them. And then we'll be like, Dad. And you're like, oh, wait, sorry. Yes, I was not paying attention. You know? And I sometimes, you know, isn't that probably the way that God looks at us? He just steps back and he smiles and he goes, this is why I made you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Last question here. I would love, there are tons of people listening that have either been here before, it's been a while since they've come back. What would be your, you know, what I always like to joke and say, like, this is your non-subtle nudge.
Right.
To come back. You know, if somebody's thinking like, gosh, I go back to Nicaragua, it's been a little while. What would you say to have them buy that ticket, hop on that plane and come and see us here?
Well, as I said earlier, it's been 4 years for us. And it was a little bit of a struggle to try to get back. And you know, everybody's got some reason we shouldn't go back, you know. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, if I can just get, and for us, this year's a little bit of starting over. You know, we had a string of years. We're bringing over 100 people and we have 45 right now that our group, this group right now, is kind of the guinea pigs. You know, it's like, oh, if they all come back.
The wide-eyed new first trip look, yeah.
But there's everybody at home sitting back going, are they going to come back alive?
Yeah. Luckily, when they see smiling faces on Instagram stories, it's like, oh, they're good,
And I always am like, you know, as long as 95% of them get back, we're doing well, you know? But like, you know, it's so, you already know it's worth it. It's worth having, you know, your pastor or a family member who goes, I don't know. Like, the moment you step off that plane and the moment that Amigos group is waiting to pick you up and you get on that bus, every one of those feelings comes right back. And then it's not magic, but whatever. The Amigos spirit or something that just kind of like begins to take over. And it happens, and I'm witnessing it. It's only Wednesday right now. I'm witnessing it right now, and I kind of know how it's going to work and how it's going to flow. And here's the thing is I know when this group goes back, that next year I'll have twice as many people. Yep. And so what I would say to you, it is worth the extra trouble. It is worth the battling with the travel agent and battling with that parent that looks at you and goes, you shouldn't be going there. It's not safe there. The person from your church that's like, there's people here that need it too. And it's right that there are people everywhere. And you're right. You don't need to go to Nicaragua. But most of you probably already do work right where you're from. And there is something different that happens when you get out of everything you know and you pull people out of their comfort zone and you put them in an environment where they actually have to live and walk and breathe with somebody else. That a different kind of transformation takes place. And so there isn't one part of me that regrets signing us up and coming back down. And, you know, every one of my kids are already like, okay, so next year when we come down, they're not like, hey, do you think we'll come back next year? They're already telling me next year when we come back. I have parents who are like, next year when I bring this person with me, we're going to blah, you know? And so that's kind of the cool thing is now it just begins to drive itself.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, to wrap us up here, I want to say thank you.
Yeah,
you
know,
think about that phrase that you used out at the Academy today of rewriting history. It's like rewriting the history books. I think about the DNA Dugan history book. I remember the first night I showed up in Incarnate Word, the multi-purpose room. I remember walking up those stairs, scared to death. Go to youth.
Yeah.
And I remember getting up and introducing myself. I'm Danny. I'm a sophomore at SMET. I remember you giving me a hug. I remember your sister Heather being like, hey, welcome. I remember the time and space. And it's funny because we laugh. It's like if you would have said, hey, I want to fast forward 15 years and we're going to be sitting at your kitchen table, your house in Chinandega, tearing up in this conversation, talking about life, I would have been like, I don't know if I'm going to come back to youth group. This sounds a little too scary, but
you are weird.
But thinking about it, it's like, and then coming here, it's like us, you know, talking all the time, catching up. It's like, I'm just so grateful for you. Yeah. And when you said 500 people over all these, it's like, those are 500 stories too of,
right,
of history being rewritten. So thank you.
Oh my gosh.
Love you, dude.
That's so just, welcome.
Great. And it's Amigos family, thanks for tuning in to our different first type of podcast like this. Just sitting here kind of almost like coffee house style.
I know.
Chilling at the kitchen table. So keep tuning in and follow all the good stuff that we have going on. And we hope to see you here in Nicaragua soon. So thank you.
See you. Bye.
All right, Amigos family, thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for part two of this series, Café con Dané, with Jared Alexander and what he's up to now. Stay inspired with us. Thanks for all you do, Amigos family. We love you. See you soon.